Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's good to be here. It's good to have all of you here and have visitors here. I met one of Brother Louis Miller's brothers this morning, and I think there's two here. I might be wrong, but I would say he fits. It's good to have you all here and others. The title this morning, Redeeming the Time, comes out of our Sunday school lesson. I was thinking this last evening. I picked up a martyr's mirror. How many of you have martyr's mirrors in your homes? How many of you have read through them? Good. I can't say that I have, but I did. I would encourage you to take some time to read through there. It puts some things in perspective. Just article after article of two or three or six or sometimes a lot bigger number that simply were willing to stand up for what they believed, to do what is right. A lot of it would have been being rebaptized and as adults, as believers, and knowing that their lives were in danger. Redeeming the time. I'm going to look at Psalm 90, a few verses here in a little bit. There's a verse there in 12 that I especially want to look at. A very familiar verse. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. As you're thinking about numbering our days, you know, what does that mean to you? We've got a calendar. We see people have birthdays, and we put years on. We celebrate birthdays. The older we get, kind of maybe the less we care. Till we get old enough, then we care again, maybe. But you know, I love to see these little children that are just can't wait till they're 4 years old. They get to go to Bible school. They get to go to Sunday school. And they're not far away from six, and they're going to go to school. You know, it's so exciting. And next, can't wait to get to 15 or 16. That's a milestone, being able to drive. We just crossed a milestone in our family. The youngest has a driver's license. And that's hard to believe. The time flies. You know, then it's 18, 21, or maybe 25, so you can rent a car. Numbering our days. It was exactly a year ago, excuse me, this afternoon for the date. It was on a Saturday. But then I got a call from my brother. And it was the first call that he made after their son Japheth drowned. For those of you that aren't familiar with him, he was 17, I believe. And they had went on a camping outing. And he's a strong young fellow. He was very active. It was very common for him to come home from work and jump on his bike, on his cycle, and go down to the river and take a swim. And so what happened this afternoon, just briefly, he was by himself, and he went to what they call the J Johnson's ISIL up in the mountains where they were and went swimming. So somewhere, whether it was the cold or whatever it was, he ended up drowning there, and that's where the family found him. But I was driving home from the barn to my four-wheeler. The phone rang, and I just looked to see who it was, and I saw it was him. So if it had been somebody local, I'd have probably just waited until I got home and called him back. But I just answered and said, "You hang on just a second, I'll be at the house." And he said, "Could you just pull over there where you are?" And my heart sank, because I knew something was bad or wrong. You know, those are words that no brother, parent, grandparent wants to hear. You know, schedules changed immediately. Excuse me. What was important suddenly changed. You know, teach us to number our days. As I think back over the history of our church here, you know, as I thought back, I can think of quite a few places where I was standing, the job I was working on, when we got the word of someone involved in a fatal accident. You know, we have the expected passing of those that have lived to or beyond the expected amount of time here on this earth. But then we also have the unexpected. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. You know, the challenge, I believe, are the choices that you are making today, preparing you for an eternity with God. You know, there's some statistics, and I had looked at these quite a few years back, and I did a little bit of research again, and they've changed over time. If one lives to be 79 years of age, then is the average person, you know, what do you do with all those days? 26 years sleeping? Now back 20 years ago, there was a lot more time working than there is now. Now they're saying 13 years and 2 months working, 4.5 years eating, 3 years, 1 month, and 3 weeks vacationing, 5 years dressing, 11 years and 4 months of screen time, 1 year and 4 months exercising, 3 years waiting for somebody, 5 months tying your shoes. A lot of them don't have strings on them anymore, but 115 days spent laughing, a year and a half in church services. And also this gives us statistics of how many days is spent getting ready. For men and women, I won't say those, but so is this what Moses was referring to? In Psalm 90, verse 12, adding up your days. You know, adding days is not necessarily living or numbering our days. If you had a bank account, a bank that credited your account every morning with $864, that carried no balance from day to day, allowed you to keep no cash in your account, and finally every evening cancel whatever part of the amount you had failed to use during the day, what would you do with that $864? Draw out every cent, of course. Well, you have such a bank, and its name is Time. Every morning it credits you with 86,400 seconds. Every night it rules off as lost whatever of this you had failed to invest to good purpose. It carries no balances. It allows no balances. It allows no overdrafts. Each day the bank named Time opens a new account with you. Each night it burns the records of the day. If you fail to use the day's deposits, the loss is yours. Robert G. Lee. Let's go back to Psalms here. If you've got your Bibles turned open, and read a few verses there. I'm going to break in there at verse 9. Psalms 90, verse 9. For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. The days of our years are 70 years. And if by reason of strength it be 80 years, yet is there strength, labor, and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Who knoweth the power of thine anger? Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. If we look at the background of this psalm written by Moses, it's probably the oldest psalm written, sometime around 1405 before Christ. When God told Moses that the only ones that were going into the land of promise were Joshua and Caleb. You know, if we you know what that is? Somebody tell me what it's supposed to look like? Okay, an hourglass. So we all have an hourglass. Our time. What we don't know, what we can't see, is how much sand is up here. That's an unknown. But we know that every day, one more day is taken off of our allotted time. One more day is gone with its opportunities, its privileges, its duties, its responsibilities. We can't recall it. But remember, years ago, there was a poster in one of the schoolrooms, and it had a picture of a clock on it, and it said something to the effect that time is not, you can't is not recyclable. We can't bring it back. When it's gone, it's gone. You know, how many times do we wish that we could just start over? Take back what we have done or seize some opportunity that we passed up. There's something startling or sobering about that thought. You know, if at the end of our day, our sheet is white and clean with pure thoughts, kind deeds, gentleness, you know, we don't need to mourn over a lost day. But it's a different story if our day is smudged with idleness, selfishness, many of the things we heard about in the Sunday school and in the opening there out of Colossians 3, angry words, lost opportunities. It's not the kind of day that Moses had in mind. It's a lost day. No act of kindness, no matter how small it is ever wasted. There's a few quotes that kept popping up on my phone here lately on some status, and it really struck me how many of these were related to kindness. Live simply, love generously, care deeply, leave the rest to God. Those four things come not back: the spoken word, the sped arrow, the past life, the neglected opportunity. And maybe the true way of numbering our days is in the last part of that verse, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. You know, we should be living our days in a way that we'll be gaining wisdom from them. Life's lessons can't all be learned from books. You know, we can gain a lot of knowledge from books, from teachers. But have you ever had somebody explain to you what patience is and how to, what it should be? You know, you can explain that, but it has to be put into real life. It has to be put to the test to learn it. It can explain how to apply it to life's frictions, but that knowledge of what patience is won't necessarily make me a patient or you a patient person. It's by practicing that patience. The school of life is really to learn patience. You know, we can and we should learn from the experience of other people, but have you ever seen a child that you can just tell them not to touch a hot stove and they won't touch it? You know, there's probably a few, but most of them will have to touch that stove to some degree or another before they really learn that that's hot and they don't want to touch it. And it seems like as adults, aren't we sometimes the same way? We have to learn the hard way by stumbling, suffering, making our own mistakes, and endure the consequences of our own pride and self-will. But, you know, out of the things that happen to us through the day, we should, if we're to learn, get a heart of wisdom, we should learn not to make the same mistakes twice. You know, when we come to a birthday or a new year and we look back over the past year, you know, what happened, we can't change the things that have been done. It doesn't do any good to sit there and cry over, like they say, spilled milk. You know, if there were wrongs that needed to be made right, haven't been made right, we need to do that. But tears and grieving won't change the mistakes we've made. But we should have become wiser because of the things that we went through. To err is human, but we ought not repeat our errings. You know, we shouldn't burn our fingers twice in the same fire. We should begin each year a wiser person. Each year should be on a higher plane than the last. The hurts made this year by the things that have happened to us should have enriched our character. And I'm going to look at a Bible character here before too long that brings that out clearly. Romans 8:28 says, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and to them who are called according to his purpose." You know, if we're living right, close to the heart of Christ, we'll take the good out of the things that come into our lives that will make us a better person out of us. There's a story told, I almost think Louis Gravers gave this one here, but I'll give it again. It's a college girl, and as she tacked up her New Year calendar to the wall, she said, "It's going to be a beautiful year." And her roommate asked, "How do you know?" She said, "Well, a day isn't a long time, and I'm going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful because I'm going to take a day at a time and make it so. I'm going to see to it that every one of those 365 days gets at least one beautiful thing into it through my efforts." So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts into wisdom. So maybe that's what she was trying to do, a day at a time. If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 37, I'm going to read some verses out of there. It's a man that, young man, that numbered his days, applied his heart into wisdom. We find, we're breaking in at 37, verse 18. So before this, Joseph had, his father had made him a coat of many colors. And somewhere in there, he had had a couple dreams that all their sheaves, his brother's 11 sheaves, bowed down to his. And he made the mistake of telling them this. I believe it was done innocently. He also told them how the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to his star. And so this is in the background of this story where we're breaking in here, Genesis chapter 37, verse 18. It says, "When they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, Some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. And Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands, to deliver him to his father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked. And behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brother, brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content, and they passed by the Midianite merchant men, and they drew up and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. Drop down to verse 36. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and a captain of the guard. Now we don't read that Joseph was blaming himself for his mistake and telling his brothers his dreams, that he's grieving over past mistakes, bitterness toward his father for his partiality and causing his brothers to be to envy him and to have this jealousy in their hearts. You know, if anyone would have had a reason to go into a shell of self-pity, it would have been in bitterness, maybe towards his parents, his brethren. It would have been Joseph. But Joseph made the best of whatever situation he was in. If we go on over to chapter 39, start with verse 1. It says, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, a captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him out of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house. And all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee. Because thou art his wife, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day that he hearkened not to her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when he saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. And he came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass as I lifted up my voice and cried that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass when the master heard the words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison, but the Lord was with Joseph, showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. You know, Joseph was one that did the best he could every day, in whatever situation it was in, it seems. You know, here he was sold to Potiphar. And he saw that the Lord was with Joseph. Potiphar did. And he put Joseph in charge of all his things. He saw that that everything was blessed when Joseph was in charge of it. I'm sure Joseph was still struggling with being in a strange land, but that didn't change what he did. He put his heart into it. And the tables turned again because of his faithfulness. And refusing to give in to Potiphar's wife, he ended up in jail. You know, he didn't tell her, you know, hey, I can't do this. Potiphar's going to kill me when he comes home. You know, his reply was, he was looking up. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He was numbering his days. Applying his heart into wisdom. Then in the next chapter, we read the story of the chief butler and the chief baker's dreams. He interpreted them. And after he told the butler, he said, in 3 days, you're going to be up serving the king again. And the baker was looking forward to his dream, and it wasn't so well with him. He was hung. But he told the butler, he said, remember me when you get up there. And I'm sure the butler said, I will. I'll tell Pharaoh about you. But you know what? He got up there and he forgot all about it. And 2 years later, Pharaoh had a dream. And the magicians and the people couldn't interpret it, the wise men. And suddenly the butler thought about that, that time down there in the jail when Joseph came to the rescue and told them their dreams. And I don't think these things just happened. God had it planned. And he told Pharaoh about Joseph. And they brought Joseph, the jailers cleaned him up and brought him up to the king, to Pharaoh. And Joseph interpreted the dream. For the Lord interpreted the dream through Joseph. And it says in verse 37, it says, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there's none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. You know, through all this, Joseph was able to save his father's house and was reunited with his father before he died. You know, after his father died, his brothers feared Joseph, and rightly so. They knew that it was in his power to punish them for what they had put him through. But we see Joseph's response in chapter 50. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. He spake kindly unto them. Do we get the picture? God meant it for good. His close walk with God enabled him to number his days, to apply his heart into wisdom. You know, we can look back, we see the big picture in Joseph's life, but we won't always be able to see it in our own lives or in the lives of those that we love. Teach us the number of days. You know, we can't look back, sit there and look back at our failures, but we need to pick up and to go on, to focus on who we want to be, where we want to be, to make each day beautiful. You know, it may be a simple thing as sympathizing with a child that has lost something, kissing a bruised knee, putting a Band-Aid on it. Maybe a note of encouragement to someone who's struggling or facing difficulties. Yeah, just taking our minds off ourselves and focusing on others, on someone else's need, and taking the good that the love of God gives us. You know, our faithfulness, numbering our days, won't always be taken right. What was Joseph's thanks for being faithful to Potiphar? For being determined not to have an illicit relationship with his wife. He was thrown into prison, but good came out of it. It was a means God used to get him connected with Pharaoh so that he could interpret the dream. And through that, save his father's house. So what are some important things in numbering our days? Starting our day right. Appreciate what Jared shared this morning in pursuing God. You know, sometimes when we can't feel it, it doesn't feel like it. We need to pursue. We need to keep on. Spend time. You know, we're busy. We end up with late nights. We just can't get up in the time to have our devotions and prayer time. Or maybe we just do it and it's a little ritual. You know, we can't number our days rightly if we don't have God in them. One of the first lessons we have to learn is that we can't do it without God in our lives. You know, human guidance has its place. It's one of Christ's ways of guiding us. You know, as humans, we crave relationships. We feel stronger if we have companionship. But you know, human wisdom is fallible. Human strength is often weakness. We must have Christ as our guide and our companion. You know, our prayer should be each morning, Lord, teach us to number our days, apply unto wisdom our hearts. We need God's forgiveness, even on the best of our days. You know, can we ever come to the close of a day and say, lift our hands to God and say, I've lived this day perfectly? No. Can we say, I've only spoken good words? You know, somewhere we've failed our brother or family, done something we shouldn't have done, or left something undone that we should have done. Isaiah 64:6 says, all our righteousness are as filthy rags. So at best we fall short of our duty, but we thank God for his grace, for his mercy. There's a poem here, into the day. I got up early one morning and rushed right into the day. I had so much to accomplish, I didn't have time to pray. Troubles just tumbled about me. Heavier came each task. Why doesn't God help me, I wondered. He answered, you didn't ask. I tried to come into God's presence. I used all my keys at the lock. God gently and lovingly chided. Why, child, you didn't knock? I wanted to see joy and beauty, but the day toiled on gray and bleak. I called on the Lord for the reason. He said, you didn't seek. I woke up early this morning and paused before entering the day. I had so much to accomplish that I had to take time to pray. You know, I think as we look back, we need to be careful to not focus on the negative, but to focus on, it's good to look back to see where we want to go forward, but let's focus on the going forwards part, not where we were. You know, it's sad if we go through 365 days, whether it's our birthday or a year, and that if we aren't wiser, stronger, and more Christ-like than we were when we crossed the threshold of the last year. You know, every struggle we have should be a stepping stone like Joseph's. It should make us stronger in our Christian life. Every victory we, like the psalm says, every victory will cause us some other to win. The testings, the cleansings, the friendships. You know, days come to us one by one. God has broken them up into the years into the little sections so that we can get along with our work, our burdens, our struggles. So let's take each day as it comes. and not like the philosophical clock that spent too much time meditating on its future. It reasoned that it had to tick twice each second, 120 times each minute, or 7,200 times every hour. In 24 hours, 172,800 ticks. This meant 63,072,000 times every year, calculated the clock. In 10 years, it would have to tick 630 million times, 720,000 times. At this point, it collapsed from nervous exhaustion. You know, how many times do we, like the clock, try to look at our year or years ahead of us and feel like we're ready to collapse? We need to focus on making today beautiful, then do the same with tomorrow. Then we can number our days in a way that will make each one bright. Like the way the Apostle Paul says it in Philippians 4:8. One of the classes quoted that verse here this morning. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. We need to rely on God. Just like the flowers need sunshine and rain from heaven, so our lives need that connection with Christ to give them true Christ-likeness. You know, the disciples were not losing time when they spent time with their master. When they held those quiet conversations with him down by the seashore or up under the olive trees by Bethany, you know, those were their school hours, their feeding times. The healthiest Christian, the one who is most fitted for godly living and godly labors, is the one who spends time with Christ. Just sitting down quietly at his table. In closing here, I'm going to read a couple of John Edwards' resolutions as a young man. There's five of them. He said, he's resolved to live with all might while I do live. Number two, resolve never to lose one moment of time, but to improve it in the most profitable way I possibly can. Resolve never to do anything which I should despise or think meanly of in another. Resolved never to do anything out of revenge. Resolved never to do anything which I should be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. If we can take those and apply them to our lives, it's something we'll never regret. I'm going to ask our song leader to come up and lead after the prayer, leads song number 807. It's in the Zion's Praises, so it's not in your books. I'm going to just read it here. We sang this back in the day in the chorus, but I haven't sang it for a while, so hopefully we can sing it. Teach me, O Lord, to number my days. Teach me to number my days, that I may apply unto wisdom my heart, that I may apply my heart. I am but a man. My years are but a day. Short will be my stand, and brief will be my stay, and I will not again e'er pass along this way. Verse 2, and let me be wholly devoted to thee, to daily increase thy praise. Life is like the sand, soon trickled through the glass. Flowers we appear to perish as the grass. And a thousand years with thee as yesterday is past. Verse 3, and satisfy early my deep yearning heart, that I may rejoice alway. 70 years and 10 are all our lives may hold. Fleeting years with we spend, a tale so quickly told, and judgment greets us then, our Maker we behold. Teach me, O Lord, to number my days. O teach me to number my days. Let's stand together for closing prayer.